On January 2nd, 2016, armed protesters opposed to federal control of public lands captured a wildlife refuge facility in eastern Oregon. The Malheur Wildlife Refuge was occupied by Ammon Bundy and his followers. Bundy's father, Clive, had faced down federal officials 2 years earlier when confronted over unpaid grazing fees. The Malheur Ranch occupation lasted 41 days. It pitted rural Americans opposed to federal intervention on public lands, with their government trying to manage huge tracts of western land. In the end, one protester had been shot dead by federal law enforcement. The property had been trashed, and 26 members of the occupying group were indicted. Ammon Bundy was found not guilty of federal conspiracy charges. Filmmaker David Byers was on site during that occupation, and he turned the footage into no man's land. The film was nominated for Best Documentary at the Tribeca Film Festival, and it will debut tonight on Idaho Public Television and will air throughout the week. I got a chance to sit down and talk with David about the making of No Man's Land. I started the conversation by asking why he was drawn to this particular story.
I'm from Georgia, and I moved out west back in 2007, and I was kind of astonished with how much public land we had out in the West, you know, being over 50% west of the Mississippi. And I thought that that was just the coolest thing ever, that we can go and camp wherever we want. I was kind of surprised to learn that there were people who did not see this as a good thing. And so that kind of piqued my interest.
So how did you end up then in Malheur? Take me through that process.
Sure. So after I kind of learned of this growing movement against public lands, I kind of started following, you know, the different kind of iterations of this protest movement, I guess you should say. So that a lot of the times involved like these militia contacts and then, you know, these politicians at different levels. And so obviously the Bundys came on my radar at that point. And so I kind of started following their story and was kind of filming this as a back burner project for a long time. But it hadn't really kind of reached a national conversation at that point. And so when the events at the Malheur happened, you know, when Ammon Bundy et al. Took over the Malheur National Wildlife Refuge, it was clear that this was kind of a really handy vehicle to kind of explore this larger topic. In that, you know, as a documentarian, you're always looking for something with a beginning and a middle and an end, because real life really doesn't fit into, you know, a narrative arc so handily. So when that happened, it was kind of like this little arc fell out of the sky, and I knew I had to be there to go film this thing. So I was out there from about 4 or 5 days afterwards until the end, and the entire occupation was 41 days.
What was it like being there during that occupation? And did anyone think it would last that long?
You know, it was really hard to say. So I'll start with the second one. the second question first. You know, Ammon Bundy and his cohort were saying that they were there for the long haul. And so once I did pick up a producer, he was like, man, you got to be prepared to stay out here. And I was like, well, you know, how long is it going to last? He's like 6, 7, 8 years. And I'm like, no way. And he was kind of messing with me at the time, but no one knew how long it was going to go on. And so I was out there indefinitely. You know, I had no time frame that I had to get back. Now, in terms of how it felt on the refuge, yeah, I mean, it was tense at times. It was really boring at times. It was very surreal at times, you know, because it was a lot of people out in the middle, basically of nowhere, in these old, you know, federal buildings. You know, back in the day when they built them out of stone, it was like those really beautiful Civilian Conservation Corps like buildings. It was kind of hard to put your thumb on, because I felt a little awkward being there. But then I talked to people and they just seemed like normal people, but they were out there doing this thing that was kind of off the wall. Mm-hmm. And so
let's talk about that. But yeah. I think you make a good point that, you know, maybe, you know, more mainstream would question why are people out there doing something like this, especially if they're maybe not from that area, not understanding, you know, the impact of public lands, right? Because as you said, we don't see that as much on the East Coast as we do out West. And so then they're like, you know, why would you go do this? Who are these kinds of people? Mm-hmm. But then when you talk to them, did you find more commonality than not?
Yeah. And I think that's true of like any kind of, you know, opposition or conversation in the U.S. is that, you know, if you drill down deep enough, we do all have the same basic values, you know, when it comes down to it. And you know, there were like very specific policy things that we agreed on as well. You know, they were, for example, against the militarization of the police and against the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. And I was like, you know, that's something that kind of throws a wrench in people's perception of what they think about these type of people out here. And so that to me what was really interesting about making this documentary is acknowledging and actually doing a deep dive on the nuance of people's personalities and their motivations rather than just painting them with a broad brush and saying, well, you know, crazy guys in Oregon, there you go. And so I think that's what has contributed to the success of the film as well, as people are like, well, I disagree with that guy, or, you know, I really agree with that guy, or, you know, but I could at least, you know, I can envision their humanity now. They're not just a faceless opponent anymore.
We're speaking with documentarian David Byers. His film No Man's Land chronicles the occupation of the Malheur National Wildlife Refuge in Oregon. It debuts on Idaho Public Television tonight and will run throughout the week. When you went in there, what was the goal of the documentary? What was your end goal with it?
Oh, man. I wish I could credit myself with some sort of foresight and knowing what was actually going to happen. For me, my goal was to get coverage of the event and to actually talk to people about why they were there rather than getting them just shots of their guns or, you know, the guys in the tower with, you know, rifles and stuff like that. I was really trying to get to know these people and understand why they were there. And I think I had an inkling of why they were there, but I wanted to know from them, you know, why they felt that this thing was so important, or why they felt that their vision of America was so jeopardized that they needed to go do this thing. And so that was my goal. I didn't know anything more specific about the structure of the film or how the film would turn out, because I didn't know how it was going to end. And I didn't even, I really was looking for coverage while I was there. And then really kind of at the beginning of the editing process is when we really started doing a lot of the soul searching about, like, you know, what we wanted to highlight, like whose voices we wanted to amplify. And those are difficult choices, you know, because you are forced to be a bit reductive in that, and you're choosing someone to represent a whole,
And when it's a documentary, I don't mean to interrupt, but when it's a documentary, was your goal also to not take a side?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I wanted to. There's always going to be a point of view in a documentary.
Everybody has bias, no matter what.
Yeah, absolutely. I think being unbiased is just it's a myth. You know, unless you're a robot, which I am not, and so it was. You know, I wanted to acknowledge these people's humanity, and I wanted it to be a story about humanity and, like, motivations. And I hope I accomplished that. And I think I did in that I did focus on these personal stories rather than, you know, going into a real deep dive on kind of these legalese arguments that they were using and then rebutting that or supporting that or whatever.
Well, and I think that that's what we heard in mainstream media for so long. It was that the legal deep dive. Mm-hmm. That's and it was hard to understand.
Right.
Whereas when you did what you did and you actually talked to the people occupying, is the takeaway from this film, whether you agree with this or not, is to see them as human beings and to have a deeper understanding of why they did what they did?
Yeah, absolutely. Because I think even if you still, obviously, this isn't going to change a whole lot of hearts and minds because we just don't live in that kind of environment anymore.
Right.
You know? But, you know, given I wanted people to at least acknowledge these people's humanity in that it gives them tools to actually work with other people who they would simply oppose rather than understand. And I think I didn't want to make a, you know, documentary that preached to some rarefied choir or anything that was, you know, supported these arguments for the transfer of public lands or anything like that. It was less about the arguments and more about the motivations and the people.
Or do you think, too, to just agree to disagree sometimes?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think that used to be the case before we became so intellectually siloed, you know, is that you had to interact on a personal level with people you disagreed with all the time. And now we are in a situation where you don't have to, and you could seek out your own echo chamber. And so agreeing to disagree is not a point of weakness. You know, it's a concession of everyone's humanity, You know, and that's a good thing. And that's actually a way to move forward.
And is that the ultimate goal of the documentary?
Yeah, absolutely. The ultimate goal of the documentary is really to show these people humanity, to give people tools and the understanding to actually engage in opposition against people or not, but actually move the needle on issues rather than simply opposing people.
What about the people that lived around the occupation mm-hmm. but were not in the occupation?
Mm-hmm.
Did you interact with them? And if you did, what was their take on what was going on?
I did interact with a lot of the people in Burns, Oregon, which was the town closest to the Malheur National Wildlife Refuge. And, you know, like everything else, it was very complicated and very nuanced. And it's impossible to paint the sentiment towards the occupation as monolithic. There were some people who were very much for the occupation. There are some people who are, you know, just completely against it. And then there was a large segment of the population that was, you know, against the occupation as a tactic, but were appreciative of the fact that some of the issues that they cared about were being amplified to a national level. And then there was everything in between, you know. And so, but it was very complicated. And I think a lot of people around there, you know, the people of Burns, it's very friendly. Like, the people there are very pragmatic and they get along and they work through their problems. And so I think to them it was a bit of a loss of innocence, and I think it was just also an injection of polarity into their everyday lives. It's a very resilient community, and humans are very resilient in general, but, you know, that's something that will always be there, is those kind of raw feelings from this occupation.
What's been the reception of the film?
The one intractable side doesn't like it because I don't glorify these people, and the other intractable side doesn't like it because I don't completely lampoon these people. But I feel like most people live in the space in between those things. So most people have appreciated it. You know, I've had people who are Bundy supporters say, you know, I'm glad that you at least acknowledge the humanity. You know, it's clear that you don't agree with them, but I'm glad you went and spoke to these people and showed them as human beings and not as like monsters or crazies or anything like that. And then, you know, I've had people on the other side of the spectrum, like kind of more moderate, who say, you know, I disagree with these guys so much, but at least I know how to talk to them now. And I know I can go talk to them. I think that's actually the most important thing, is they know they can go talk to them, you know, mm-hmm. and that's important.
You know? Have you heard from anyone who was featured in the film since it came out?
I, you know, a lot of these guys are in jail, so I haven't heard from those. But I have heard from some folks that have reached out to me via Facebook and via email and talked to me about it. And they have mixed feelings as well. You know, they truly believe in this paradigm that the federal government should not be able to own or manage public lands. And so that's what they're focused on. But at the same time, they do appreciate the fact that I did show humanity there.
Filmmaker David Byers chronicled the occupation of the Malheur National Wildlife Refuge in 2016. His documentary, No Man's Land, will debut tonight on Idaho Public Television and run through the remainder of the week.